Good morning. I really wish I was in there, actually. Wow. You're not going to scream like that today, I don't think, this morning. I'm sorry. I want to remind you that we are currently updating our church directory, and that's posted on the bulletin board outside of the green board out there in the foyer area. So please let us know if you're not on that list or if you need to update it. Just give us your address and information so we could have that, so we can contact each other, and if we can kind of be in better touch. So just please stop by and do that on your way out this morning. So we are kind of in the middle of a series called Good Wealth, where we're looking at how to be wealthy well, because we just did a series on the book of Amos, where Amos challenges the people Amos is a prophet in the Old Testament, and one of the main things that they're doing is they're not using their wealth well. Their nation has just become suddenly wealthy, and they're not using their wealth well. And so Amos critiques them because not only are they not using it well, but they're actually oppressing people because of how they're using their wealth. And so the question that you might have had coming out of that series is, okay, well, if there's a chance that I'm not using my wealth well, then how do I use my wealth well? How do I use my wealth to glorify God? And in the first week of this series, we talked about how it's important for us to be generous because our generosity reflects the generous love of God towards us. And when we are generous with our money and our resources, we reflect God's love to our world. And we talked about how we need to do for one what we wish we could do for all, how we could do generously, give generously to people and to ministries, give generously like we wish we could give to all. Then last week, we looked at one of the problems that often can come with wealth is our hope begins to migrate in a certain direction. We start to trust in our wealth as opposed to God. And our heart moves in that direction. And that's why Jesus gives us this really interesting warning. In the Sermon on the Mount, he says, you can't serve both God and what? Money. Yeah, that's kind of the main idea from this series. You can't serve both God and money. And again, if we were to be writing that, if I was Jesus, which I'm not, I think I would say, like, you can't serve both God and Satan. Because that's kind of what is in our mindset. We have the picture of Homer Simpson that we've looked at a couple times. That's kind of on TV shows. That's what you'll see. You'll see the devil on one side, the angel on the other. And so if you were to say that, you probably would say you can't serve both God and evil. You can't serve both God and Satan. But Jesus, when he has the opportunity to fill in that blank, he says money, which is kind of weird. He gets to this understanding that we can easily put our hope and our treasure in money as opposed to God. And I remember the first time that I felt like I was rich. I worked at a summer camp for a little while, and I was during the summer, and I think during that summer I earned about $1,300, and I just thought I was like a millionaire basically, because this was my first time like actually having a bank account and having money. And at the end of that summer, because I was obviously living at home and my parents were taking care of all the other things, so I had that like all $1,300, and I remember thinking like, I can buy something now. That's kind of the first time in my life. And that might have been the first time for you that you felt like, wow, I have this wealth. I've suddenly had this windfall of $1,300. And how am I going to use it? When was the last time you felt rich? It may have been a while ago for some of you. But what would it take for you currently to feel rich? Like, think about that. Think of a number in your head right now. I want everybody to think of, like, what is the number that you would say that would make you feel rich? And I'm going to try to guess what it is. I'm trying to telepathically connect with you all. All right, I think I've got it. The number is this. More than you have. Thank you. I'll be here all week. And for all of us, that's true, right? I mean, we think like, if I could get a job making this, if I could get this promotion, if my family could move into that house, if I could buy that extra vacation house, if I could get that new car, whatever it is, it's like, if I only could have a little more than I currently have or a lot more than I currently have, then I would feel satisfied. Then I'd be fine. And this is exactly why our hope can so easily migrate to our money or our stuff. Because we say, like, whatever your blank is, if I just had blank, then I'd be good. Then I wouldn't have to worry. Then I could live fearlessly. Then I'd be just fine. And so our hope starts to migrate, and we think if we could just get that job or just get that or just make that amount of money, whatever that blank is for you, your hope starts to migrate to that blank, and you don't really hope in God anymore. You hope in that thing, in that dollar amount, or that stuff. So you start to turn your heart in that direction. So the question that we're asking today is, how do I keep my hope from migrating? I mean, how do I know if my hope isn't migrating? Because I think there are certain things that we do need to like save for, certain things that we need to enjoy in this life. But how do we know that our hope isn't migrating, that we're not just living for those things? The Apostle Paul, I think, explains this in this passage that we've been studying in 1 Timothy. He says this. He's talking specifically because he's addressing rich people. We just looked at the passage before this where he says, command those who are rich. So talk to those who are rich. And then he continues with this thought. Command them to do good, to be rich, not in a savings account or in the stuff that they have, but to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. So Paul says, if you have been blessed, if you have resources at your disposal, don't just be an average do-gooder. Don't just do a little bit of good here on the side. Be rich in how much good you do. Be generous in how much good you do. Don't say, well, I just want to do a little bit. I don't know if I'll have enough. Be generous in how you give. Be generous in how you serve. Be generous. Be rich in good deeds. And the problem is, so much of the time when we have extra, it's just easy to waste it, especially on ourselves. And I know that you probably don't feel like you have a bunch of extra money or a bunch of extra time, but the fact is you probably do. I mean, most of us work 5 days a week, and we have enough for 7 days worth of food and shelter. And nobody said wow to that. Because it's assumed for many of us, right? But that's not how it works in most of the world. But in 5 days, you amass a certain amount of wealth, enough for your food and shelter for 7 days. And we kind of take the weekends for granted. Then we're like, man, the weekend went by so fast. You're already at the water cooler on Monday morning. You're like, what just happened? I don't even know how this got here so quickly. And you just kind of assume that you have Saturday and Sunday off, that you get a vacation package, that you get some time to yourself. But even in the midst of our busy work weeks and the busyness of our lives, I imagine that many of you work an average, maybe about 60 hours a week. Maybe it's a little less, possibly a little bit more. But if you work 60 hours a week and you sleep 8 hours a night, which I know no one is doing, but let's say, just for the source, let's say you're sleeping 8 hours a night, working 60 hours a week, that means you still have 52 hours of waking time that you get to choose what you do. So you still, if you have a 60-hour work week and you sleep 8 hours a night, you still have 52 hours of waking time that you get to choose what you do with it. And that is not the case in many parts of the world. People who have to work every single day to barely make it by. People who have to work long hours just to make it through. But you very likely have at least 52 hours a week to do anything that you want to do. And so Paul's word to you, if you're in this camp, is be generous. Be rich in good deeds. Be willing to share. Be willing to share of your time. Be willing to share of your resources. Be willing to share the things that you have been blessed with. Because if you have extra, you should definitely consider yourself blessed. But you have extra responsibility as well. And there's not a way that you can save enough to get to like true safety. There's not something that you could buy that'll ultimately make you fulfilled and happy. And I want to say something just to comfort you for a second. This is not going to lead us to like an extra offering at the end of the service. We're not going to like repass the trays and all like watch exactly how much you're putting in. Or I'm not going to show up at your house and be like, let me look at your bank accounts. And I'm not going to do that this week. I think some of you would rather memorize Leviticus than have that happen. How many people are there? Like, I don't want you like looking at what I make. I don't want you know that's totally understandable. So we're not gonna talk about that. But there is a very important thing that I want us to learn from a very simple story from the life of Jesus. Something that if you allow it to, it could really change your heart. It's a story that you may have heard hundreds, if not thousands of times if you've been at churches regularly. In Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44, it says this, Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were, put, and watched the crowds putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on. So this isn't a story, a parable that Jesus makes up. This is a story. Jesus sees this woman and he says, hey, look, this is an object lesson for you right now. And this woman, it says that she gives this small amount of money, just two copper coins. This was like barely currency, okay? I mean, if you think about something, I mean, they're trying to phase out the penny, I think. So think just two pennies is kind of a good illustration. This, the amount that she put in, scholars say, is worth about 6 minutes of a day's work. I mean, so just like the blink of an eye, what you waste on Facebook at least. So she just throws these two copper coins into the tray, and you know, and it just makes that sound. And you know, you've judged people before when the tray's passing and you see an adult and it's like a coin instead of something else and it's not a kid. You're like, hey, come on. Like, come on, let's do this. Let's do this one more time. And this is what they would have thought. I mean, the disciples would have thought about this woman, this really insignificant amount of money. They would have been like, who cares? And who cares what? It's like nothing. It's two pennies. Who cares about what she just put in there? Jesus, the disciples are like, what? Why do you worry about her? I think it's so important, and there are only a few times in the Gospels where Jesus does this. I think I might do a sermon series on this. There's only a few times in the Gospels where he like points out someone does in faith and says, learn from this. He points out an individual or something and says, like, look at this person's faith. This person's faith is amazing. And this is one of those examples. This is one of those times when Jesus looks at what this woman does, looks at the offering that she gives, and he says, hey, everybody, gather around and see this. Hey, disciples, make sure you're focusing. Hey, Peter, I know you're always looking at other things. Look, make sure and see this. I mean, come on. Make sure you can't miss this. And they see this woman who's just dropped two pennies in the offering, and they're just like, what's the big deal? I mean, come on. Jesus, look at what all the other guys were doing. So some of those people threw in thousands of dollars. I mean, that one guy over there, he's got a big business in town, and he's got a pew named after him in the temple, and they're building a wing because of all that he's put in there. I mean, come on. It's two copper coins. What is the big deal? And that's exactly what the disciples would have thought. They would have thought, that is almost worthless. I don't even know if they're going to count that. They might just throw it off to the side. But Jesus says, this widow has put in more than all the others. This widow has put in more than all the others. This reveals the very important thing about the economy of God. Because an act that many people would have said, oh, that doesn't really matter all that much, is so important to Jesus and so important to God. Because they would have said, what about all those other people? What about all those other large amounts that they gave? But this reveals something that's so important for us as we walk away from this series eventually after next week. That percentages are what matter to God, not dollar amounts. Percentages matter to God, not dollar amounts. And then I've got something that will probably shock you, I know about you. You live off a percentage of your income. No one was too surprised. All right. You also give a percentage of your income. And do you know what that is? And do you have any idea? Maybe around a ballpark? And do you know? Do you look at it? I mean, you can say, is it after taxes, before taxes, whatever. You just choose. I don't care. Let's say after. Do you know what percentage you give? I mean, do we know that? Do you know how much you live on? These are important questions for us to ask. Because when Jesus sees a woman in the temple, he says, you know what I'm impressed with? I'm impressed with this person who gives beyond her means. Who I know to you, these two copper coins aren't really that big of a deal, but to me, those things are huge because it represents a percentage of what she has. It represents a large percentage of what she was going to have to live off of. She has riskily given. She has boldly given. She said, you know what, God, I'm going to make you my priority. And she said, here is this large percentage of what I'm going to have to live on. This is what I'm going to offer to you. Now, Americans, typically this may or may not be true of you, Americans typically are spontaneous givers. Like you see something that happens across the world, you see a tragedy, and you can text a number or you can send in money to the Red Cross, and those things are good. Spontaneous giving is extremely good, and we should have the opportunity sometimes to look at these things that happen and be able to give to those things. But spontaneity doesn't always work. And spontaneity isn't always the best thing. You know what really can help us? If we're going to say, you know what, God, I'm going to redirect my heart. I'm not going to let money govern me. I'm going to redirect my heart to you. You know what will really effectively help you do that? Predecision. By saying, you know, this percentage of my income, and I don't think the New Testament gives us an example. In the Old Testament, talks about 10%, but I think if we had to give a certain number, Jesus would have spelled it out a little bit more clearly. But if you are giving something, if you decide, like, this is what I want to give, and whether that's here or other charities or things that you believe in, that's okay. I hope that you believe in what we do here because it's really important that we do have money to do the things that we hope to do for the kingdom of God. But whatever it is that you have, do you know what percentage it is that you're giving? Because spontaneity is good, as I said, but you end up just kind of giving here and giving there whenever kind of you feel like it, instead of saying, this is going to be my pre-decision. And here's the thing, charities and volunteer places like churches, whatever, around the country, around the world, are blessed by people who pre-decide that they're going to give either their money or their time. I mean, just think about our church, for example. This morning, Bill and Barbara Rogue came here at 8:45, and they opened all the doors all over. I saw Bill sweeping out in front. He helped fill it. He put a bunch of attendance cards in here. Barbara starts the coffee. They take down the chairs. They make sure everything looks good over there. And they come every time at 8:45. We had many Bible teachers who came, showed up here at 9:15 to help out with our kids. We had Lincoln and Cecilia Spear, who every week come and put in all the trays, all of our stuff for communion. Every single week they decide to do this. We have Chris Settlemyer and Bob back there helping with the sound. Turn off my mic for a second, guys. I mean, it would be really hard if I had really loud to help out. Hopefully they're back there for me and they're helping out through this process. Yeah, they're like kind of toying with me now. That wasn't what I asked for, but God, is that you? We have so many people in our church who pre-decide, who make a decision every single week. I mean, imagine if every week I'm just like crossing my fingers. I'm like, I really hope Lincoln and Cecilia come through this week. I really hope that the doors are going to be open. I mean, if it was just all kind of spontaneous and random, it would be chaos every single Sunday. I mean, we'd have to figure out getting the doors open, doing everything. It would be chaos every single Sunday. But people have pre-decided, this is what I'm going to do. This is a ministry that I want to take hold of. And they've pre-decided, this is a ministry. This is an offering of my time to God. So spontaneous giving and stuff, that helps. But charities and organizations are run by people who pre-decide and say, you know, I know that I have this much that I could live off of, but I am going to decide. So what is your percentage? And what do you give out of the income that you have? And I would just encourage you this week, this is my challenge for you this week, just to figure out what that is. And again, I'm not going to come over and knock on your door and be like, hey, remember that conversation? I'm here. I'm not gonna do that to you. But just think about it and look at it. And what percentage do you live off of? What percentage do you give? Because we all want to have a heart that's redirected. And we don't want to have a heart that's dedicated to money or stuff. You want to know the way to do that? It's by pre-deciding, God, this I'm setting aside for you and your glory. God, I know that if I get it all myself, I'm going to be tempted to use it all for me. So I know myself. I know my heart. I'm not going to do that. I know that if it all just came to me, it would be easy for me to just decide to use it. But I pre-decide, God, this is the percentage. This is the percentage that I want to dedicate. I want to give to you. Here's a picture of a chain burger. I don't know exactly what chain. I just Googled chain burger. It looks fantastic. I don't know if that's battered jalapenos. I don't know exactly, but it looks like a great burger. So there was a study done by Tufts University. Chris, if you go to the next slide. A Tufts University study found that restaurant meals on average have 1,397 calories, or 70% of your daily caloric need. This is a study, they went and did this. And here's the thing that I know that's true about you, and it's true about me too. Like, if I go to a restaurant, I eat it all. And it's just unbelievable. And then you walk out of there feeling terrible about yourself and life, and then you just feel awful in like a few hours, and you're just like, why did I eat that entire burger? And there's just no reason. Mandy and I, when we go to Mexican restaurants now, we just share the meal because we know we're going to eat our weight in chips and salsa, and I weigh a lot. So, I mean, you just kind of have to go in. And the best kind of restaurant eating is to go in with a plan. Right? I mean, to maybe say some people do this, like just put half of it in a to-go bag and I'll get it at the end, or my husband and I are going to share, my friend and I are going to share, because the problem is if they put it in front of you, you're going to eat it all, right? And you don't go to lunch, you don't go to dinner, your body doesn't go to these meals and go, man, I really need 1,400 calories. And unless you've been working out extremely hard, your body is not saying, I really, really, really need 1,400 calories right now. Please bring them to me. But we eat them if it's in front of us. And we eat them if it's on our plate. And we don't even really think about it. And I think the same exact thing is true with our money. And you may have a job. Right now, maybe you don't, but eventually if you get a job, you can think about this. But every couple weeks, you get a paycheck. And if you don't watch yourself, if you don't pre-decide, you can just use it all for yourself. Because our world is constantly going to tell us you need more. If you only had this, if you only had blank, then you would be satisfied. If you only could get to here, if you could only have this much in your savings account, if you could only have that much for retirement, if you only could do this, then you would be completely satisfied. And you're going to be tempted every time you get a paycheck to just use it all for yourself. And this is how your heart migrates. This is how your heart migrates in the direction of money. This is why Jesus says you can't serve both God and stuff. And every time you get a paycheck, you make that decision. And if you haven't made a pre-decision, if you haven't said, you know what, I looked at my finances and this is what I want to give. This is what I want to give to God's glory. If you haven't made that pre-decision, just like with your lunch today, you could end up just eating it all for yourself. You're going to end up with a few extra pounds probably on the scale pretty soon. And you could end up just eating it all for yourself. You could end up just using all that you get for yourself. But what if you said, you know what? I'm going to dedicate this part of that. I'm going to say this goes to God. And think about what you could do at the end of your life. And think about how excited you could be to look back on your life and think about all the causes that you were able to give to, all the people that you were able to bless just because you said, you know, whenever I get a paycheck, this percentage is going to another cause. This percentage is going to someone that's not me. Imagine what it would be like if at the end of your life, you could think about all those things you've done instead of all that stuff you have. This is something that is tough to talk about, and people are sometimes suspicious about this, but it's really not something I want from you. It's something I want for you to experience the great joy of learning what generosity can do to your heart and what by pre-deciding to give what it can mean at the end of your life when you look back on all the good that you've done. Because you can say with your life, praise God, I didn't just get more stuff. I didn't serve money. I served God with my life. I served God by serving others. And one thing that's so great about this story that Jesus tells about this woman who just throws a couple copper coins is God notices. I mean, how great is that? That even someone who has just a little bit but gives a good percentage, God notices. So to those of you who give well at our church, I don't know who gives anything, but God notices. To those of you who give of your resources, your time, God notices. God sees even this woman who throws some coins into the offering tray that many people, I mean, it's the kind of coin that you would walk by probably if it's on the ground. But God notices those who say, this percentage I'm dedicating to God. This percentage I'm dedicating to something other than myself. And praise God, God notices generosity like that. Let's stand and worship our God. We've chosen this song, This Is My Desire, to help us kind of remember that it is our desire to worship God, to put God first with our lives. Let's stand and worship.